Hello and welcome back to episode 10 of the Impenetrable Fortress podcast. I'm Alan Jackaway and across from me is James Bunnell. We're going to talk pretty soon about week 7 of the NFL, and we're actually going to do full season as if, like, if you were drafting again, top 20s from each of James and me. I'm pretty excited about this.
I'm pretty excited about this too. I gotta say, I'm really surprised with the math that I have chosen.
Alright, we'll talk about that when we get there. But first, I wanted to talk a little bit about the offensive side of the ball, and specifically Buffalo Bills.
Yeah.
Buffalo Bills are on their fifth or so quarterback for this year, and that quarterback, supposedly, probably starting, is Matt Flynn.
Yeah.
And you might say, it's a bad sign when you're on your fifth quarterback or whatever.
You might say that.
You've regressed to Matt Flynn, but here is my theory about this for the Buffalo fans in the audience, of which maybe there are some.
Yeah.
The first place Matt Flynn was.
Right.
Green Bay Packers with Aaron Rodgers.
Yes.
He plays one really good game. He gets moved over to Seattle. In Seattle, he gets passed by Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
Who I think we can agree is great.
Yeah.
He then moves to Oakland, where he gets quickly passed by Terrell Pryor, who maybe is not as great as Russell Wilson, but has looked pretty good to me.
Right, and is definitely exciting.
My theory now is that EJ Manuel going to the Buffalo Bills is the single best thing that can happen to the Buffalo Bills' other quarterbacks.
Right, you met Matt Flynn, but yes.
Really sorry about this, podcast listeners, but at this point, we had an issue with our recording, and you miss out on a really delightful 5-minute segment where I suggest that Matt Flynn was placed under some kind of witch's curse whereby he is always doomed to play on teams where a second quarterback will pass him. And then James suggested that perhaps Matt Flynn is a witch or a warlock, thereby trying to get an easy NFL job for himself by simply being the backup everywhere but still being paid highly due to his perceived excellent skills. Sorry about the loss in that recording, but we'll rejoin with James's discussion of Matt Flynn and his being a wizard or warlock.
Also, Matt Flynn, that's pretty easily a witch warlock name.
Yeah, it kind of has that sound to it.
Yeah.
Alright, so anyway, it is the official opinion of the Impenetrable Fortress podcast, I believe, that Matt Flynn has some kind of supernatural ability to make other quarterbacks around him good, whether that be a blessing that he bestows on them or a curse placed upon him at some point in his life.
Yes.
We are not sure.
No. More research will be done. Our findings will be shared with the general public.
They certainly will. All right, well, let us go into our top 20s for the year, forever, after the break. All right, James. So here's what we're going to do here. I've decided that rather than going through the weekly things that happened, which, you know, things happened this week.
Yeah.
We'll talk about some of those, I think, with some of these players. I thought that we would go through our top 20 if we were drafting again right now for this season, who we would want in our top 20. Do you want to go from the top to the bottom or the bottom to the top?
Let's go from the bottom to the top. That sounds more exciting.
I think it's more exciting. It may be obvious who we're coming to.
Yeah.
So, but before we do that, so I did this. I kind of took my preseason rankings. I mixed in players who were doing really well. I kind of blended those together. You took a mathematical approach,
right?
More similar to value-based drafting. Is that
indeed
correct?
Indeed. I started completely from scratch. I've taken the players' performances up to this point in the season. I have determined the average number of points scored by the top 50 or so players at every position. And then, using that and some standard deviation math, I've determined how much above average these players consistently score. And so my rankings are actually less about the points. My rankings are more concerned with how much better a player is than other players at his position. So when Alan was talking about this thing at the beginning of the season that we posted,
the value-based drafting column,
mine is much more similar to that, and consequently my top 20 list might seem bizarre to a bunch of people.
Yeah, I'm told it's going to be pretty surprising.
It will be.
Now, in order to make sure that we get all the positions in before the top 20, I have a couple like honorable mention players. Do you have some players who didn't quite make your top 20 that you wanna mention before we go in?
Well, so my top 20, it turns out, is remarkably evenly split between the positions, so I didn't feel like I needed to add anybody else in. But if I did have honorable mentions, they would all be linebackers, because the one drawback of my mathematical approach is that linebackers were heavily devalued. Which, as we all know in fantasy, linebackers score the most points, so you probably want more of them, but then my rankings
because
were...
Because they all score the most points, yes. They get lowered. I understand.
Yes.
So, I wound up with plenty of linebackers in mine, but had fewer, for example, defensive tackles and things like that. So I will say, just because he probably isn't on your list, I would still put Geno Atkins at fifth among defensive tackles for the year. Which is probably lower than he is in a lot of lists.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do some of those afterwards. We'll see who showed up in your rankings before we decide. So why don't we start at number 20.
Number 20.
Our 20th most desirable player to draft if we were starting right now.
Yeah.
My number 20 player, a favorite of mine.
Uh-huh.
Tyrann Mathieu.
He made it on my list, but I'll say he made it above 20.
Really? Yeah. Well, so that's exciting.
Yeah. My number 20 is Paul Posluszny.
Oh, that's pretty low for Paul Posluszny.
Yeah, well, so, interestingly, though, he ends up, he's the fourth of the four linebackers that made it on my top 20 list.
Interesting.
He is the only person on this list who has scored less than 1.5 standard deviations above the norm for linebackers. I will take this opportunity, just from so far this season... The average points scored by a linebacker, which isn't technically true because I haven't used all the linebackers, just like the top 50
yep,
or so.
That's fine.
Has been 9.8 points.
Okay.
All right, and the standard deviation,
which is a lot,
and the standard deviation between the first and 50th has been 2.1 points, basically. So Paul Posluszny has scored, on average, better than like 70% of linebackers.
Interesting. So I have Paul Posluszny much higher. I think that there's potential for him every week, that he's, reliable every week and therefore more valuable. We'll see how much more valuable before. And I guess we'll talk more about Tyrann Mathieu when we get up to him with you. But, he gets reliable source of tackles.
Absolutely.
Forced fumbles here and there. It's, it's what you need, basically, out of a starting cornerback for your team.
Yeah.
All right, number 19 on the list. I have safety for the Bears, Major Wright.
Major Wright again shows up higher on my list than that, even. So, but we're on the same track, so definitely good. My number 20 is Dontari Poe, defensive tackle for the Kansas City Chiefs.
You see, Dontari Poe has been quite good. So how much better, what is he, where does he come in, not to spoil too much of your
right.
list, but among
That's
defensive
okay.
tackles, where among, does he come in for you?
Among defensive tackles, he is fourth on my list.
Okay, I have him.
He is third on my list. My apologies.
Very
yeah.
good. I believe I have him second among defensive tackles on my list, and he'll be showing up later in my rankings.
Outstanding.
I guess let's go up to
18
to keep this moving. I have D'Angelo Hall.
D'Angelo Hall does not make my list.
Does not make your list.
I know.
James.
Also,
a reliable source of tackles every week, in my opinion. He gets those interceptions for touchdowns that you love because he doesn't exactly cover well and gets targeted a lot, but he loves picking off the ball and undercutting routes.
Yeah.
He's what I want, in a cornerback for my team, just in terms of a reliable producer who some weeks is going to put up enough points to win for you.
Yeah.
Well, who do you have 18?
I have at 18 Calais Campbell.
Oh, yeah, hurt right now.
Hurt
but
right now.
Not as bad as it seems. So they stretchered him out of that game, and then it
but
turns out...
he's actually okay, pretty much.
And
yeah.
reasonably likely to play next week. So I really like Calais Campbell. He did not, however, make my top five defensive ends. How high do you have
him
among defensive ends?
Four. There are four DNs on my list. He is four.
Interesting.
So.
Well, I guess we'll get to talk to... I have, for number four, I only have three defensive ends on my list. My fourth is Mario Williams, and fifth would be Osiu Mainura. So I like five players better than Calais Campbell.
Interesting.
And that's not... I mean, I guess, yours is based more on points. I think that
and
Mario
mine is
Williams
all...
has the potential... He had that 4.5 sack day or whatever, and just... in terms of giving you potential from a week-to-week basis.
Right. It's worth noting that I think... somewhere between Alan and I's rankings is where these players should end up. Alan is way better at projecting potential, whereas my stats more or less only reflect past performance. So.
By way better at projecting potential, James means working harder to...
yes,
more
exactly.
More focused on, not necessarily better from a result standpoint. All right, let's go to... let's keep it moving. Let's go to 17. My number 17 player, if I were redrafting right now, would be Earl Thomas. Safety.
Interesting. Again, he shows up higher on my list.
I'm not surprised by that, because he's like the number one safety or something like that in the fantasy right now. But I don't know. My opinion when I've been playing this is that safeties, there's a lot of safeties who score a decent amount. Like, what was your, what is the standard deviation in points for safeties? Is it the smallest of any position?
Actually, no. It's the second largest.
What?
Yeah. The standard deviation of the top 50 safeties is about 1.7, with an average of 7.4 points scored at that position.
That's so, really support. Wait, okay. So what are the positions?
Shall we go through this?
Yeah,
okay,
go through the positions in order by standard deviation size. Like how much variation there is.
Okay, so obviously the biggest standard deviation is with the linebackers. 2.2.
I would not say... Okay, that is not obvious to me, but all right.
They score more points, so...
Right, okay.
From the average, the standard deviation size is probably bigger. Because larger sample size. Safeties show up next on the list with an average of 7.4 points scored and 1.7 points in deviation for the... This is all, of course, assuming a normal distribution, which probably isn't true, but... Next on the list, in terms of the size of standard deviation, is defensive ends. They score, on average, fewer points than cornerbacks, but they deviate more, with roughly 1.7, again, between...
Okay, that's not that surprising for me. I mean, we saw last year a lot of defensive ends end up around the same in scoring, but on a week-to-week basis, I'm not surprised by that early in the season.
After that, we get cornerbacks who deviate by about 1.5 points from an average of around 7.2, which is pretty good.
Yeah, and those all sound kind of similar. Those three positions sound pretty similar.
They are pretty similar.
Defensive tackles average is probably like 5 or something.
It's
3.9. Right, because you took a lot of players, and their standard deviation is...
1.3.
So as a percentage, it's probably one of the higher ones. Because I would have thought defensive tackle would be by far the highest.
It is true. As a percentage of the average score that we're talking about, standard the defensive tackles probably have the highest standard deviation. I guess I could do some quick math, but screw it.
All right, well, anyway, who is your 17th player?
17th, I have DeAndre Levy. Detroit, yeah. Solid linebacker.
He shows up higher on my list.
Yeah.
So
again, the linebackers are devalued on my list because I ignored total points, basically.
Yeah. All right, well, 16, I have Dontari Poe. I know that, we both love Dontari Poe as a player, so I would put him at 16th for the year.
Yeah, right there I have Lance Briggs.
Oh, yeah. I like Lance Briggs. Lance Briggs was not a player that we talked about a lot going into the season.
No.
We were so focused on this DJ Williams, John Bostic thing that we kind of
forgot about him. And he's number 3 in scoring right now.
Yeah, that was a mistake on our part, I think.
So, that was a mistake.
Anyway, Lance Briggs is good. There's not really much to say about that. What are we at, 15 now?
Yeah.
I have Navarro Bowman.
Navarro Bowman does not make my list, but then again, not many linebackers do.
Yeah, I think that in his expanded role, Willis will come back and... that might lower his total numbers or at least his sack numbers eventually, but I think he's another one of these super reliable guys. When I'm drafting, if I was drafting, I don't want to blow a first round pick, second round pick, so I really want someone safe like that.
No, yeah, he scores very consistently.
Yeah.
And has been getting much better as the season goes on. He's definitely a good player. He just doesn't make there is an argument to be made that it's possible that some of the people on my list don't score consistently because of the high standard deviation.
Well, so who do you have 15?
Carlos Dansby.
Carlos Dansby did not make my list because I still believe that he's going to fall off at some point. He's been very reliable. He has a ton of points on the year, but I just, from a week-to-week basis, I'm concerned in terms of drafting for the course of the year that there would be a drop-off there.
Yeah.
All right, 14, I have Tim Jennings, cornerback Tim Jennings of the Chicago Bears.
He shows up on my list and is a little bit higher. But at 14, I've got Bernard Pollard sitting here for safety, or fourth safety, I guess.
So I do not have Bernard Pollard on my list, even when I made the expanded list of safeties. I did not have Bernard Pollard. Going into the season, I was skeptical about him. There was a point in this podcast where I kind of recanted that skepticism, but I still would not be wanting to draft him top 20. Just because, you know, he's another player like Carlos Dansby that I believe a drop-off will occur at some point. And, you know, maybe it wouldn't be this year, but I still think so. Although Tennessee's defense has been very good.
Tennessee's defense has been very good, yeah.
So, that's something. All right, 13. 13? 13. I have DeAndre Levy here.
There you go. I've got Barry Church, the Dallas safety. He's been really surprising this year in that he's been good, and I have not expected that. But he's been solid the whole year, so...
Yeah, they're not a team that has regularly had a reliable safety option.
No.
I think that having a safety that's getting a lot of tackles is very helpful to them.
Yeah.
It's partly because their cornerbacks are really bad.
Yes.
They're kind of a team like, who were we talking about last week? Where the
Sides.
Yeah, and also Jacksonville, where, you know, they can't cover anyone and they get a bunch of tackles in the safety position.
Yeah.
So, I think that's fully reasonable. He's been quite good.
Mm-hmm.
He did not make my list, but that might be anti-Cowboys bias. at number 12...
Yes.
I have Carlos Dunlap, who's been scoring very well at defensive end. I think he's actually the number one defensive end in our scoring at
the
moment.
He is, and for... Yeah, because of that and because of reasons of his scoring, he is number two on my list.
Oh, spoilers.
Yeah,
spoilers. Yeah, I mean, I like Carlos Dunlap. I think that he's very talented. Mm-hmm. He plays on a defensive line with a lot of other very good players, Michael Johnson and Geno Atkins, and I think that from a week-to-week basis, that means that he's a little inconsistent, and that kind of drops him down my rankings a little bit. I mean, obviously still top, whatever, 12,
right. Yeah,
I just
top
said.
12, but, yeah.
But I wouldn't be willing to take him as high as number two.
Yeah, he is my favorite defensive end in all of football right now. So,
and he's been really good. I just I would still
and
prefer.
Interestingly, at number 12, I've got J.J. Watt sitting there.
Oh, it's too low. Too
low
for J.J. Watt.
Yeah,
I don't know. I love J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt is my number two.
Well, there you
so
go.
There, we swapped these. I couldn't take Dunlap over J.J.
Over
Watt.
J.J. Watt.
There's one player I could take over J.J. Watt, but that's it. Just the one.
Yeah.
I think we're going to agree on... Well, I guess not, maybe with player. Well, we'll see.
But I think I know who you're talking
about.
Let's keep
flying at it. Number 11, almost to the top 10, but number 11, Sean Lee for me.
Sean Lee does not make my list, interestingly.
Not surprising.
Not surprising.
As a linebacker.
My linebackers,
He's been, I think, a very reliable middle linebacker for Dallas. I think that, you know, their defense would be totally screwed if he was out.
Yes.
I think that he's going to get tackles every week.
Yes, I agree.
Just totally, you know, again, I kind of like these safe, reliable tacklers here, and I just locked in production every week.
It is sort of, our idea of sort of a good middle linebacker on a bad front seven.
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of tackles get funneled to him. I just think he's reliable. Who's your 11?
Tyrann Mathieu. This is where he shows up
on
my
good.
List.
Good for him.
Yeah.
I
love him. He's great.
We've talked
so
about
much
him a lot. I mean, you know, he gets the tackles, he gets everything that you need. You know, very reliable. Which is surprising, because coming into the year, everyone, you know, wasn't even sure that he was going to be on the field reliably, and he's, you know, really put up points.
It's kind of, No, he's definitely good. Definitely, definitely good.
Yeah, I've been very impressed. All right, number 10 for me is Lance Briggs, someone that you already mentioned.
There you go.
Again, been our third best linebacker for the year, but he's number 10 overall for my rankings because there's some players I like more for potential going forward, basically.
Makes perfect sense to me. I have Denoris Searcy sitting here.
Denoris Searcy does not make my list. I'm still kind of skeptical. I really want to see what that... That defense, the Buffalo defense, just got back Jairus Byrd and the other cornerback on their
team. Yeah, his name I can't remember.
and I really want to see what happens to Denoris Searcy with those two players back a little more, and just wasn't willing to rank him top 20 for that reason.
I'll say this, that his performance last week was 7 standard deviations away from his normal performance.
Maybe he's dropping off. I don't think he's due for like a tragic drop-off or whatever. I just wouldn't be willing to take him that high in terms of potential.
And I'm right. Last week's performance was almost certainly unsustainably good for him, but still.
All right, number 9, I have Muhammad Wilkerson. I'm sure he's very high on your list.
He is very high on my
list. Way above all the other defensive tackles, but this is about where I had, you know, it's actually higher than I had Geno Atkins coming into the season, and it, you know, it's the same theory I had coming into the season that you get a big advantage from having him instead of another defensive tackle.
Right.
And you should be willing to put up a top 10 pick for that if he's going to be reliable, which I think he will be at this point.
Absolutely, yeah. I do have him much higher on this list. My number 9 is Major Wright.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yep.
Love him. Gotta love him. He's number two safety for me.
Yeah.
He's perfectly reliable.
All right, number 8 for me, a player I'm guessing did not make your list, and a player who did not respond to our challenge, Luke Kuechly.
Yeah.
Luke Kuechly was like number 2 for us coming into the year. He's been fine. I think he's something like 8th or 9th among linebackers for the year so far. But I still believe in Luke Kuechly. I would still take him number 8 overall.
Yeah, Luke Kuechly does not make my list. If only because it's possible he is too consistent. Like, hilariously, he's within like a 10th of the standard deviation of average of linebackers. So, like, model of consistency for sure. Which is, you know, something that you could easily be something that you value and something that you would want to look for in a player.
Yeah, it's something
that I value.
Which is why my team scores the same every week and I lose every week. Although not this week. Number 1 in our league for this week, so.
Rock and roll, man.
Who's your 8?
Tim Jennings.
Oh, good. Yeah. Good job. And, you know, he's... Tim Jennings, what's great about him is every week you might get an interception touchdown or something like that. It's kind of fun to own players like that. When I make my coming into the season ranks, I focus on tackles and reliable production. But in terms of a week-to-week owning a player, I don't know. When I make my ranks for next year, I'm definitely going to bump those kind of players up a little bit.
Because they're a lot of fun to have.
This year's been kind of not as much fun for me, I think. every week it's like, oh, this guy got some tackles and a half sack or whatever, but they're, you know, I don't get those big weeks. So.
Mm-hmm.
I've been trying to get him with the waiver wire pickups and trades because I feel like I made a mistake there.
Yeah.
All right, number 7, I have Robert Quinn, defensive end for the St. Louis Rams.
Me too!
Nice!
Holy crap. Wow, that's awesome that worked out. Yeah, good job, Robert Quinn. You are perfectly rankable.
Exactly.
In any scheme.
The math and the projecting, it all works out the same.
Yeah.
I don't know, do you want to say anything other than he gets a lot of sacks, he gets a lot of tackles?
He gets a lot of sacks and he gets a lot of tackles, so he's a great player.
He's a... You know, coming into the year, we really weren't sure if he was going to repeat his good year, if Chris Long was going to step up, and it's pretty obvious now.
It's been him. Yeah.
It's going to be him. Absolutely. It's been him. It's going to be him. Robert Quinn.
Yep.
All right, a player for number 6 that I have probably lower than you do. Number 6?
Number 6.
I might have ranked 21 players.
That's okay.
I might be off by 1 here. All right, anyway, it's... Alteron Verner from the Tennessee Titans. I'm guessing you have him a little higher.
A little bit higher, yeah. But my number 6 is Earl Thomas, so that's,
Yeah, well, let's talk about Alteron Verner when we get to him on your list.
Okay.
Let me do number 6 again, because I'm very sure that I ranked 21
players.
Number 6B.
That have been
off. For me is Von Miller.
Okay.
So if I were drafting for the rest of the year, he's now through his suspension. I think he's going to, you know, come right back in. You know, you always hear about, you know, they have to get into football shape or whatever.
Right.
I don't think he has to get into football shape.
He'll I don't be think all right. so either.
So I would take him 6th overall for the year.
Von Miller does not make my list because the math has no data to give to him. So, but I'll say this, I did check up on his stats last year. He performed mathematically roughly on the same level that Paul Pogelesny is performing right now. So like 1.5 standard deviations above average. So I've got him 10 in my linebackers for the weekly rankings. I've got him at 10th, right above Paul Pogelesny, because there was a little bit of math that made him a little bit better than him. But not quite enough to make my list, but definitely enough that if, you know, somehow he's unowned in your league, take the shit out of him.
Well, and if, you know, that could be the case. If you're in, for example, a league that just has a few defensive players.
That's true.
It's not an all-defensive, you know,
players
we
league.
Play
yeah.
this all-defensive player league, but if you just have a few mixed in, teams might not have been willing to waste a bench spot on him all year.
Right.
Use a bench spot on him all year.
Right.
So he might be out there, and if he is, you know, he would be a solid pickup for your team. You said yours?
Yes, that was your 6B. So
yes, that's right.
Okay, so now,
number five.
5
for me is the other suspended player, Darrell Washington.
Right.
So.
And of course, he also doesn't make my list because math doesn't support it. But I would just say that he is definitely a good pickup. I mean, there's no reason to believe he's not going to be amazing.
Right. As I've said before on this podcast, coming into the year, before the suspensions were announced, my draft list for the year went J.J. Watt,
Darryl Washington, Von Miller. Those were my top three. And then Luke Kuechly. Those were my top four, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, Darryl Washington and Von Miller have now dropped to 5 and 6, decided that was. Which is a bit of a drop in, you know, the players that are above them I'm very excited about at this point and think are going to be reliable, so.
That's good. My number five is, as strange as this is going to sound, Sheldon Richardson. One of the other New York Jets defensive tackles.
No, he's been very good all year.
Right, he makes it on my list because he scores so much better than other defensive tackles. Sure. Like, that's, I mean, it's, honestly, it is hard to, you know, explain wasting a number, or using a number, you know, like a top five draft pick on a defensive tackle. But if you were going to, and you used it on him, you would be set at the defensive tackle position, although you might lose games because defensive tackles don't score.
Yeah,
points.
I guess,
but
my concern there would be just whether you could actually rely on him. You've been reliable all year, so. Mm-hmm.
I think, I really think that having him and Wilkerson in a three-man front rotation allows them all to play really well while they're in the game. Yeah. So, like, they all always get to be rested, they all can play at, like, really high efficiency, and it helps them all be better because they don't have to be good they don't have to be good for 60 snaps a game or something like that.
Yeah.
And so when they're on the field and they get their snaps, they do better than other defensive tackles would.
Gotcha. All right, number four for me is one of your favorite players, but probably not on your list, Alec Ogletree.
Yeah, doesn't quite make my list, although he's high up in my linebacker rankings.
Yeah, I just think, in addition, you know, we saw last week that he can pick off balls and run them back.
Yes.
In addition, he is a reliable tackle performer.
He gets
sacks here and there. He's everything I want from a linebacker. We're going to see a couple players like that coming
and
up.
And a really fun rookie.
Well, that too, yeah. He's also, you know, young and therefore possibly improving. I didn't put too much worry about, like, you know, sometimes players hit rookie walls or whatever.
Nah,
I've really seen that in defensive players in the past.
Yeah, I'm not even 100% sure that's a thing, so.
Yeah, so the math has been kind of questionable on it. All right, who's your four?
My number four, another star rookie linebacker, Kiko Alonso, who I assume is your, like, number one.
We'll see.
Yeah. I love Kiko Alonso. He's the top scoring player in our scoring system, anyway.
22 tackles last week.
Yeah.
Many of them assists, but still.
But still, 22 total tackles in a week is just nonsense.
It means he's in on, like, a third of plays. I mean, it's just crazy.
It's spectacular. He's such a good player. He's got so much talent and athleticism. There's no reason not to.
Yeah, and he jumped over that guy.
Mm-hmm. And he jumped over that guy. I know the math says that he's number four, but he's drafted
number one in your heart.
Number one in my heart.
All right, number three for me is Paul Posluszny.
Ah, okay.
Posluszny,
cool.
I like Posluszny a lot because he is reliable and has been there longer.
Yeah.
I mean, some of these players that I have near the top of the list here are rookies and I haven't seen, but Posluszny, I've seen enough years of him that I believe that he will keep getting the tackles. Jacksonville will keep being bad.
Yeah.
The tackles will always be there no matter what. And he can get an interception here and there and things like that. You know, it's just, it's enough for me to be happy with him in that number three spot.
Posluszny is the epitome of the good middle linebacker on a terrible front seven.
Like a theory I still ascribe to.
It's a good theory. A theory you should ascribe to. Yeah.
All right, so who's your number three?
My number three is Alteron Verner.
Oh,
this is where he ends up on my list. Yeah, he's been a spectacular cornerback this year. He has produced at a level that should be unsustainable, but has been sustainable for him.
It's really crazy. And, like, last year, Jason McCourty on Tennessee did basically the same thing. It's going to be interesting to see how we rank Alteron Verner for next year, I think.
Yes.
Because, you know, last year, Jason McCourty basically was a top-five cornerback on Tennessee. And then this year, he's been nothing, and Alteron Verner has been all of it. So I don't know. Like,
Alteron Verner is
this?
The top-scoring cornerback in our league, and also, like, the 12th he is the first player who's not a linebacker who shows up in the top scoring list.
Yeah, no, he's been great, and, you know, he looks great in terms of the skills and all that, everything you want there, so I don't, I can totally see him at number three. I had him a little lower just because of, I like these reliable linebackers a little more, basically.
Yeah.
All right, number two for me, as previously stated, was J.J. Watt. Yours is Carlos Dunlap.
Yep.
So that brings us to number one. As you predicted, mine is, of course,
Kiko Alonso. He's
been spectacular.
He should always be. He's amazing. He's easily my favorite player in football right now.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's
he's
been
just
great.
So spectacular. And Muhammad Wilkerson shows up on the top of my list, who has also been spectacular for his position.
He's been so much better than the other defensive tackles, except maybe Sheldon Richardson.
Right. He is three standard deviations away from the norm, which is ridiculous. For those of you that know standard deviations, you know that's ridiculous. For those of you who don't, he scores 99.5% better than,
Well, he's in the
top 99.5%, which is kind of a stupid thing to say when you think about it, because he's the top scoring defensive tackle, so he's actually in the top,
Well, whatever.
Whatever percent, yeah. But
probably works out to 99%.
Obviously, yeah. Right. Standard math can't be wrong, so it's exactly 99.5%.
Can't be wrong. Don't forget it, listeners. Yep. All right, that pretty much wraps up our lists. I hope this is helpful, in terms of making trades in your league, potentially, in terms of seeing where players are going to go.
Again, listeners, I suggest what you do is you have two computers. You bring up Alan's list on one and my list on the other, and then you try to smash both of the computers together really quickly, and then whatever the list turns up, that should be your draft list,
we'll
I think.
Yeah, we'll put those lists up in a post on alanjackaway.com somewhere. Yeah. I will remember to do that, so maybe not in the podcast notes, because they're only so long, but we'll put that up somewhere for people to see our top 20, and I have some honorable mentions kicking around that we don't really have time for, so. Yeah. Alright, very good. We will move on to the week 7 preview after the break. We resume this episode of the Impenetrable Fortress podcast with our week 7 previews. The most important thing to say about week 7, because we screwed this up last time with Daryl Washington, is that Von Miller will be back.
Yeah.
And you can play him.
Yeah.
In a night game against the Colts.
Yeah. Which you should. if you have him and you don't do that,
I don't really have
I revoke your privileges to play fantasy football.
Exactly. You can still listen to the podcast, but you have to do it shamefully.
Yeah.
With your head hung low.
Make yourself a dunce cap. Write dunce on it. and then you can listen to the podcast.
I really don't have much defensively to say about Broncos at Colts. They're not defenses that are particularly great.
No.
But I think that game's going to be exciting. And I do think that, Von Miller's going to want to come out and make sort of a statement about...
Yeah. There was a time earlier this season, it hasn't been the case in the last couple of games, but there was a time in the first, three games where Andrew Luck was on pace to get sacked more than twice as many times as ever before it happened in a season.
But yeah, maybe Von Miller's going to bring that right back up.
Yeah.
It could happen. I'm
saying, Colts offensive line could be bad.
James, you want to talk about what I'm sure is our defensive game of the week, which I believe is 49ers at Titans this week?
Yeah, Jesus. That's, I don't even really know what to think about that game, other than that is, a showdown of two of the toughest defenses exist in football right now.
And it's good, player-on-player matchups, right?
Yeah.
You get Alteron Verner with Anquan Boldin.
Yeah, which is, my God, that you could just watch, that could be a movie. You could just watch
Hopefully a lot of targets there available, so, he should have a pretty good week. You're starting him every week all the time.
Obviously,
but, not concerned about them scheming away from him or whatever. Yeah. And then on the other side, you get Navarro Bowman against Chris Johnson.
Yeah, which, that would have been
not as exciting.
That would have been a great movie 3 years ago when Chris Johnson was the Chris Johnson. But I still think it would be kind of exciting.
Yeah, I think so. And, this could be a good Eric Reed week.
Yeah.
Brian Fitzpatrick certainly throws his share of interceptions.
Yeah,
so that could happen.
Who will be the recipient of all four of Ryan Fitzpatrick's errant passes this week?
Yeah, we said it was going to be D'Angelo Hall, but...
I don't think that game happens, unfortunately.
It doesn't.
So.
Unless someone gets traded. So.
Yeah.
Why not Eric Reed?
Why not Eric Reed? Yeah, he's got the talent for it. And so does Fitzpatrick, whatever the inverse of talent is. Cowboys and Eagles. I want to address this game because
I think it's a good game to address.
I don't know what's going to happen in this game. I think both defenses, I think this is a good game to play your players on both defenses. Yeah, I think both,
I just wrote lots of points available.
Yeah, I think that is an appropriate descriptor of this game. You could put a gun to my head and I couldn't make a reasonable decision about who in this game.
I think you mean which team.
Which team is going to win,
I think you want the safeties.
You definitely want the safeties.
Because these teams both pass a lot and they get there. You definitely want Sean Lee because the Eagles like
to
run up the middle. That's a big part of their scheme.
Yeah.
And I guess you probably want those defensive linemen from the Eagles who I talk about every week and every week are kind of mediocre.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they're... reasonably consistent in production side.
Yeah, I mean, the Cowboys, you know, run game is kind of banged up at this point. I expect them to be passing a lot. I expect the Eagles to be passing a lot.
Yeah, have the Eagles made a decision about Foles or Vic at this point yet?
Not officially. Mm-hmm. What I've read is that it's likely Foles, okay, but it's not clear.
Yeah, if you have the Dallas secondary, pray for Vic. Because
yeah, true. He throws more interceptions.
I was going to say, that's the thing about Foles, is he may not be as exciting as Vic, but he makes fewer bad decisions.
They probably throw more with Vic in there. Yeah. I think they still trust Vic to throw more. So.
I mean, when he... it's not that he can't throw, it's that he makes terrible decisions.
Yeah, it's true.
Which is, so, like, you know, he's not inaccurate, he's just bad at judgment calls.
Yeah.
Whereas Nick Foles, probably better at the judgment call and less accurate at passer, so... I mean, it's hard to say which of the... I know, it's not. Nick Foles is safer.
he's probably safer, but he doesn't give you the running threat,
right?
Which is important for that offense, I think.
Yes,
so.
Exactly.
It should be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Patriots at Jets. I really can only mention that to say that Patriots defense lost Aqib Talib. There's a, you know, more or less 50-50 shot he'll play this week. If he is missing... Could be tough times for the Patriots defense.
Yeah, that would be a godsend for Geno Smith.
Not that they have any great receivers or whatever that they need Aqib Talib to cover, but just, you know, he allows the Patriots to just one-on-one cover a player.
I mean, we saw last week, he shut down Jimmy Graham.
Yeah,
which
really
is
did.
A spectacular feat for a cornerback. Like, that's...
Yeah, exactly.
I don't even know how
you know,
to
he was
that.
On my honorable mention list for a cornerback or whatever. Uh-huh. He didn't quite make my list, but, you know, he's been... really tremendous. If they're missing him, it's going to be much harder for them to defend even the lowly Jets, although I do like Chandler Jones sacking
Geno Smith
at least
a bunch of times
in this game.
Yeah, that could easily happen. And, you know, this could be the week that Tom Brady gets sacked four times by a rotation of Jets defensive
they do,
tackles.
You know, there is this theory about Tom Brady that he gets harried by pressure up the middle.
Yeah.
Which is really
where
exactly
the Jets,
the Jets excel.
Do.
So that'll be an interesting, you know, thing to watch. If you're watching this game, which we don't recommend.
I wouldn't recommend it.
But if you're watching this game, try to focus on the interior of the offensive line when the Patriots are there and what the Jets do to attack there.
Yeah. I want to mention the Cleveland Browns playing the Packers at home. Not because I think the game is going to go particularly well for the Browns, but I think their defense is going to be surprising. I mean, like, we've seen that the Packers have problems scoring points.
Especially with now at least one of their starting wide receivers out, possibly two of their starting wide receivers out.
Right, which will give what is inarguably a very impressive front seven time to pressure Aaron Rodgers, who is a mobile quarterback, but not as mobile as they get in the NFL. And I just think that, you know, the line on that game is 10.5 points in favor of the Packers, which I think is a little bit ridiculous.
I thought it was way too high.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not 100% sure I would say that the Browns have a chance to win this game, but it's going to be close, and the defense is going to play well. I mean, I think it's going to be a... It's not going to be a shootout.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, you know, that especially if James Jones doesn't play, and if the Packers' offense is Jordy Nelson, the tight end that always makes me miserable, and then Jarrett Boykin, you know, I think that Joe Hayden maybe can't lock down Jordy Nelson for an entire game, but can do a very good job against Jordy Nelson. We just saw him pretty much control Calvin Johnson.
Yeah, which is
an injured Calvin Johnson.
But still impressive. I mean, Calvin Johnson's got a lot of talent. And, you know, the Packers have been relying pretty heavily on Eddie Lacy basically shoving the ball straight down teams' throats. And I think that you cannot do that against the Browns.
I agree.
Front seven is too good.
Also, Joe Hayden has a... hashtag motivation.
Yeah,
you know
he
what
does.
I mean.
I do. For those of you listeners who don't know, Joe Hayden, in an attempt to... You know, a lot of these players, they play for the glory of the team, you know, for the greater good, kind of. I want to, you know, I'm here to help out my teammates. I'm here to be the best football player I can be for this team. Joe Hayden has a special motivation for himself. He has a laminated silhouette of Hawaii posted in his locker.
Yep.
With hashtag motivation written under it. Yeah, he is Pro Bowl bound in his mind anyway. That's his motivation. I think he probably is.
It. I don't know. Yeah. I guess in the AFC, what other cornerbacks do I like better than him? I probably like Aqib Talib better than him.
Mm-hmm.
That might be it.
That could be it.
it might be one person. well, Altron Werner.
Yeah, sure.
So there's three. There's yeah. three players there. I don't know how many. I'm sure that if you count backups, they send four a bajillion, or yeah. more. But, you know, I think those three would be the AFC cornerbacks. You know, I really like Tyrann Mathieu, but not in terms of as a coverage cornerback is what we're talking about with Joe Haden. We're not saying to play Joe Haden, although he probably will get more targets than normal this week.
Yeah, I mean, but he may suffer from this. He's too good in the real world to be useful in fantasy.
I just, you know, in terms of like real life cornerback rankings, mm-hmm. he'd be certainly in the top four. I just remember Brandon Flowers exists. So
right,
another one of those players good we don't point. Talk about here because he locks players down.
Yeah.
Speaking of Brandon Flowers, they play against the Texans. Texans at Chiefs. Okay, here we go. Texans at Chiefs. I've got a storyline.
Okay, go.
Can the Texans throw a pick six for the sixth consecutive week?
Absolutely. Against Kansas City, I think that is absolutely a possibility.
I don't know if it'll go to a linebacker, if it'll go to a cornerback.
Yeah.
Why not?
Hard to say who it will go to, but,
it may not even be Schaub. It may be TJ Yates again. Schaub is still, you know, he's hurt, he's in that wishy-washy, not totally hurt. Yeah. That's going to be rough, I think. The Texans have really fallen apart.
Yeah, and I think...
It's partially their defense's fault, but it's not primarily their defense's
I think
fault.
Primarily it is Matt Schaub's fault. That may be a little too hard on him. It might be the fact that they have no offensive line to speak of.
Yeah,
but,
I think that's a problem.
We know that Matt Schaub has problems with pressure, and he chokes a lot. I mean, we saw last year. He played really well right up until the heat came down on him, and then he couldn't do anything anymore. And I don't know, you know, there were injuries in their offensive line last year, so again, it could be... I don't know. I just don't think that Matt Schaub is not who they need in Texas right now.
I suppose not. All right. A little low on time. Let's see. What else quick do I have? I think the Bills, if you've got a Bills defensive lineman, whether it be Kyle Williams or Mario Williams or Marcel Darius, go ahead and start them against the terrible Miami offensive line.
Yeah.
Tampa Bay defensive players against the Falcons and no receivers.
I like that a lot.
I don't know. Do you have any quick ones?
No, not really.
I think that's pretty much it. We can go through most of the games there. How do you feel about Seahawks at Cardinals as a defensive matchup of the week as well?
Jesus Christ. Carson Palmer against Legion of Boom, that sounds like a disaster to me.
It really does. There's definitely the potential for multiple interceptions in that game.
Yeah.
But the Cardinals defense has been pretty good. I think that if the Cardinals manage to avoid throwing a lot of interceptions, I don't know if they...
Yeah.
You know, how they would go about that, but don't if they manage to avoid Palmer. That, I think that game should be close, just because the Cardinals' defense is pretty good.
Yeah, I think that's two good secondaries going up against each other.
Yeah, I mean, we could see a game where the defenses combine for more points than the offenses.
Yeah, in fact, yeah.
That would be kind of fun. The Thursday games are so sloppy anyway.
As well. Right, both of these teams are coming, you know what, that's my official prediction for this is more total defensive points than offensive points.
That would be really great. Yeah. All right, well, with that, I think that wraps up our preview for Week 7. Thank you for listening to the Impenetrable Fortress podcast. Our theme and interstitial music is Dear Liza by Ned and the Dirt. You can get their album, Giants, on iTunes or CD Baby. Our podcast is released under a Creative Commons license. It is edited and produced by Sarah Gonzalez. You can email the podcast to ask us questions or give us comments at podcast@alanjackaway.com. And of course, you can find the podcast in iTunes. James, we've been doing a segment at the end of here where I present my bid for NFL commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been unveiling a platform, one plank at a time.
Yep.
The plank that I'm unveiling this week, I heard this suggested in another podcast in the BS Report. I think this is a good idea. You should be allowed to challenge unnecessary roughness penalties in both directions.
Yes.
That includes roughing the passer, and let me explain what I'm looking at here. So, James, you are a Redskins fan.
Yeah.
The Redskins-Cowboys game featured two... not roughing the passer, but unnecessary roughness penalties on Robert Griffin runs.
In my opinion,
one of those was totally justified, and one of those was not.
I agree with that assessment.
I think even that being in general, a massive Redskins fan. And this is something that would also be part of this, I think that the rule for unnecessary roughness on those plays where someone's running out of bounds should be that if the defensive player launches themselves in a way where they could only hit the player if they were out of bounds, it's unnecessary roughness.
Yes.
And if they launch themselves down the sideline for to hit someone that's staying in bounds,
yeah,
that should not be unnecessary roughness in almost every situation.
Right. Yeah. And again,
and there was one of each in that game. So that's what kind of got me thinking about this in the first place. So I think that that rule should be changed and that you should be allowed to request a review, basically, of some of these. Because, I don't know, we see these games where the quarterback gets hit on something that is kind of borderline.
Right.
I don't know, there should be a more formal review than what happens instantaneously there. And right now you can't challenge those. And just, you know, again, one of those Dallas ones I thought was totally legitimate. The player dove at the out-of-bounds. Don't dive at the out-of-bounds, defensive players. Launch your body down the sideline so that if they cut inbounds,
you will take them out.
If you're a defensive player and the player, if the player had cut inbounds, you would have totally missed them, then you're doing it wrong.
Yes, right? Exactly.
This is the surest sign that you're doing it wrong. Launch yourself at the inbounds part of the field.
Mm-hmm. Right?
That's all you have to do in my commissionership
to
stay safe from those type of penalties. Now, the roughing the passer in the backfield, unfortunately, I think we're kind of stuck for now with the rules as they are. You can't hit them in the head. You can't hit them low.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, we saw a pretty gruesome hit on Randall Cobb in the open field where they hit him low because they couldn't hit him high because of the rules, and he wound up breaking his fibula on that play, and I don't know, we might be headed for more protections there too, which is really going to make it tough on defensive players.
I'm not sure I have a good solution to that, but always,
I
mean, Alan,
it's better, in my opinion, it's still better to hit them low than high at this point, based on our knowledge of long-term effects on people.
Right.
So
neurological damage from breaking your fibia.
Yeah.
As always, Alan, I'm 100% behind your platform. You've got your eye on your first vote for commissioner of the NFL.
James, we have a hit of the week this week.
Yeah, we do.
It's one that we're going to have a lot of trouble finding a link to.
Yeah.
It happened in the, I know you're going to be reluctant to announce it.
Happened in the first quarter, is that right?
Near the end of the first quarter of the Redskins-Cowboys game. You want to describe our hit of the week?
Reluctantly, yes, I do. So it's a quarterback draw up the middle. RG3 takes the ball and runs it straight down Dallas's throat. Sean Lee is hanging out sort of, you know, right on the edge of the secondary, front edge of the secondary there. Gets blocked by the center, pretty hardcore. Goes completely around him and tackles RG3 with no problem, as though the center had not even been there. It was a remarkably athletic play.
It really was. It's just like this crazy thing where you're like, oh, that center's going to totally block that. Oh my god!
And it's weird, because he doesn't even,
nothing happened to him.
RG3 is running to the left of the center, and Sean Lee goes around the right of the center, like goes 270 degrees to make the tackle. Like, it's just, it's, you know, as described in Football Outsiders, it is a play that would have caused you, had it happened in Madden, would have caused you to slam your controller on the ground and complain about how unrealistic the game is. It was just a ridiculous feat of athleticism.
How does he not get blocked? He must have been blocked, but he sure
wasn't. You would scream to the video game gods.
That is our hit of the week, listeners. We'll try not to give it to Cowboys players in the future, but hey, look at that effort.
Yeah, you know, as much as I like to pretend that I'm full of hatred and rage towards various teams, you have to appreciate good athleticism. You just have to. You have to appreciate good football, and that was good football.
Yeah. All right, well, we will talk to you next week, listeners, from Alan.
And James.
Stay low.